This is tape two, side one, October 27th, Michelle Gerber and Dale Gear. And Dale's going to continue talking about lead.
Okay, there is still, as of yesterday when I was out at the farm and saw it myself, there is still raw lead out in the field that I myself feel that it's an OSHA violation of the law. And this is according to CHG's own training manuals that state this, that if there's the slightest possibility of any exposure to lead oxide or lead dust, the meaning being the same, that we are required to be on a bioassay monitoring program, and that includes the urine collection as well as the test.
Now, tell me how, in what form or in what location is lead oxide or lead dust today?
All of the farms.
And how? And what component?
Mainly lead sheet.
And
but
that,
there is also some in 242S evaporator right now, below the process cell window. It is labeled as temporary shielding, but it is not sealed at all.
Now, when you talk about sheets, those are for shielding against radiation.
Right.
And in 242S, that does not operate anymore. Are people routinely occupying that building?
There is rare occasion where they might go by that window, but nevertheless, you don't know when or who would go over there. And it should be sealed.
What, when you talk about a bioassay program, that's essentially monitoring after the fact.
If you have any lead uptake.
Right, and that will tell you if you have.
Right.
And then at that point, you know, I mean, it'd just be theoretical, what good would that do? And wouldn't you want to know beforehand? Is there a way to protect it before the fact?
Being trained to ALARA principles, that would be the right approach. And we are not allowed to practice ALARA proactively, but rather reactively, by not getting these types of problems that have been identified fixed.
And so, just to educate me, how would you fix that? What would you do if you had, you know, the ability to do anything you wanted out there?
Find the right seal coat to put on something to stop it from oxidizing. They also have a Hypalon covering to the lead sheet that is out in the field, exposed to UV light. And there are large amounts of that. But the Hypalon fabric, in checking with the manufacturer, and the type of covering that they sold Hanford, it is only good for 2 years when it's exposed to sunlight. And we have Hypalon fabric that's been out there for 10 years or so. And it's known to be disintegrating.
So you have then basically several problems here. One is the lead. One is the coating itself, and one is the fact that people aren't being monitored.
Right.
How much lead shielding is in the tank farms, and is it mostly in the older farms, or is it also in Double Shell?
I think it's mostly in the older farms. I have been told, although I don't know it myself, but I have been told that the road that has a hump between B Farm and DX Farm,
yes, I know where that is,
is actually built over a transfer line. And that transfer line has a hump in it because it is built up with lead brick shielding underneath that road. Raw lead brick, by the way, and raw lead sheet is what we're talking.
This lead must have been emplaced in the old days when people thought that was a good thing. Is that right?
Yes, it happened before I ever came to Tank Farm.
Is anybody still doing that? Are they still putting that out there when they have a problem today?
There is lead stored in the farms right now that is subject to UV disintegration that should be stored out of sunlight until it's needed.
I see.
And it's callously in different places in the farms with no intended use.
Have you reported this, or has anybody that you know of ever raised, say, an employee concern about this?
Yes, I wrote a PER on the whole problem and mentioned about that.
What's a PER? I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Problem Evaluation Request.
Okay. And that goes
in... Report and request.
Is that a formal form that you would fill out as a CHDG form?
It's supposed to be a traceable type of employee concern about a problem.
And when do you think is the first time you wrote one of those about lead?
2005.
Okay. And is there a way to follow that through the company process?
There is a way to follow it, and you can actually request to be part of the solution by identifying and showing where the problem is. But once they get the PER, it's extremely rare they ever come back to check with you on any part of it, like they're required to do.
And they haven't done that?
No.
Until
I brought it up again and raised the elevation to it. Then it got handled.
Does DOE get a copy of that, or does that stay within your company?
I'm not going to comment because I don't know.
Okay.
But the more strikes against you, the less bonus you're going to get, is all I can say.
I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but I want to, because I've been curious about this all morning. When did you first go to the Joint Council? And just tell me about that experience.
With the Joint Council, I was referred to them by management, by GAP, Government Accountability Project, and by the very scope of the problems that I've identified.
When you say management, do you mean your own management within the company?
Yes, had written a PER on exposures and questions that I'd had about it, and they elevated it to a DOE employee concern, and that's when I was referred to the Concerns Council.
And so, when is the first time you met with or heard from the council? Can you put a month on it in 2005?
I've been seeing the council now for just short of a year and a half.
Okay, so early in 2005.
Yes, yeah. During the winter or fall or winter of, actually that would be 2004 then.
Okay, very late 2004.
Yes.
And did you go with one item? Was it lead or several items?
Several items.
Can you briefly list what all the items were besides the lead?
Well, I felt that there was a lot of chemicals that we weren't trained to and needed the training, and I was concerned about the health results that people were coming up with, and heart attacks were about at epidemic
among your coworkers.
Among my coworkers, and everything just pointed to there being something badly wrong that wasn't being looked at now.
Were these heart attacks among people of all ages? I mean, younger than you might expect?
Yes.
How young?
And even people that were in good shape right now, I couldn't give you ages, but you know, at the time, I could relate it. It's like this one friend of mine. He has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, has had it since he was 37, since 1991. And he told me about four of his friends that were doing the same job as he is, and all five have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I brought this up at the State of the Site meeting a year ago with Mr. Klein and Mr. Sheppens and the whole rat pack, for lack of another word. And I gave them some paperwork on it. It should have raised a major red flag. And I haven't heard one single word from any of them since then.
Besides the lead and chemicals, were there other issues besides those two issues that you went to the council with? Lead and chemicals.
I'm sure I involved also not getting a lot of things fixed. Identified problems that were not fixed.
Are these industrial type hazards, or what kinds of hazards?
Mainly industrial type.
Let me write for a second. And so I did kind of jump ahead to that because I just wanted to know sort of when all this came to a head for you. But I did want to go back. Is there anything more we should talk about in terms of the lead? Where it is, the improper burials, things like that.
The other part to the lead now, and this is talking to some of my co-workers that I've known for many years and worked right with them. One of my co-workers that has been out there longer than I have and has medical problems, although he's no longer with Tank Farms and hasn't been with Tank Farms for maybe 15 years. Nevertheless, he spent like 20 years with Tank Farms, being out there maybe about 35 years total. He told me that on back shift that they loaded up pickup trucks full of lead sheet, raw lead sheet, as instructed by their shift manager. It got rid of literally tons of raw lead out of the tank farms that were just laying on the ground, on the dirt, used for shielding, or maybe just laying waiting to be used. And they took them down to the burial trench and threw them away. Now, they weren't instructed as lead handlers. They didn't have the right PPE. They weren't wearing masks. And there was no accountability for the lead. Now, this can be documented by checking with burial grounds that they are actually, they have identified the trench or trenches where it's at, and they're going to have to dig it up at a much bigger cost than if they would have done it right to start with, which is the bottom line for most of the exposures out here. If they would handle them right, that they wouldn't have to spend millions of dollars trying to cover up stuff.
I was going to say, you know, you don't just come into work in the morning as a burial ground worker and see this stuff and go, oh, I guess that dropped out of the sky. You're going to go ask, where did this come from?
It's undocumented, and oh, it's covered up too.
Okay. That happened, and why would they take perfectly good lead sheet out of the tank farm and want to just throw it away? What was the reason?
It was explained to me by this guy that they recognized that there could be a problem with the lead being out there. Now, further detail, I doubt if it was ever given to anybody other than get rid of it.
I see. And this guy has not been in the tank farms for 15 years, so this must have happened no later than the early 90s. So you say for 15 years.
I'm sure it was back in the 80s.
Okay. There's so much to cover here. This is, today they are going to have to dig that up now and somehow encapsulate it.
Right. And the right PPE this time is going to be much more lengthy and spendy than if they would have done it right, like in a burial box.
Let me just ask about today. Are you now trained as a lead worker? Are you now?
No, I have never been trained officially, and there is nothing in my record for lead worker. The only training that I have had is being self-educated to the hazard out there by looking stuff up. And also, I got a hold of a copy of the training manual for being a lead handler, which they have taught to industrial hygienists. But they have not taught the people that handle lead on a regular basis, or at least to the point that they should be trained to.
Do you think that training should be given to every tank farm worker?
If it is in the farm and there's the slightest possibility of you being exposed to it, in the form of a dust, and they're not monitoring for it at all, real-time monitoring or otherwise, then they are not doing the proper job for protecting the worker.
Right. I wanted to go back and talk about the restart of Purex, and going way back to late 83, November of 83. And you mentioned here a brown cloud during the restart. Is that the material we talked about this morning, or is there more to that?
Well, it wasn't just during restart. It was during the whole time they were dissolving fuel rods, which lasted several years.
Yes, from 83 to late 88, I understand it.
Now, one thing that they have not put on our EJTA that I insisted that we're exposed to is that they have cadmium on there, and then next to it, they have does not work with or around. And I says, time out. It was used in the process at Purex and at Dash 5 as neutron poisons. And if they use it as a neutron poison, the toilet got flushed and it rolled downhill, and we know it went to tank farms. So, to say among all the other constituents of the chemicals and toxic metals in these tanks that we do not work with or around cadmium is wrong. If it's in the tank or in a spill that has been done, it's in our breathing area.
Now, during the late 80s, early 90s, I see a lot of characterization work in the tank farms. A huge push seemed to finish up about 1998. Now they seem to have a list, at least some list, of what's in the tank. Have you seen those lists? Do you think they're accurate and comprehensive?
I don't think they're anywhere near accurate enough. I have specifically requested for knowing what is in different tanks, and I have gotten the runaround for incomplete data. 101SY has been identified finally is having 10.3 kilograms of mercury in that tank during the time that I worked on it, and that comes to about 25 pounds of mercury. The temperature of that tank, if it was any higher than 77 degrees,
which we know it was,
it made it more volatile, more out of the stack and in our breathing zone, which was not monitored except to a very limited degree for ammonia, flam gas, and ferrocyanide.
But they weren't monitoring for mercury?
None.
Were there any monitors stationed around the farm?
No.
Or on people? Nothing on you and nothing?
Not during the time of any of that window work. Now, I do have a purr that was written by nuclear safety and licensing person that identifies that they had as much as 2,700 parts per million ammonia coming out of the SY stack during that time frame. And obviously, everything that we look at shows that that was far, far excessive, and that they should have remediated the problem instead of just paying attention to deadlines and windows and mixer pumps.
I'm sorry, I'm silent because I'm looking for something. I had written down something from the historical records on the amount too, but I'm not finding it quickly, so I don't want to sit here and just leaf through papers.
Well, I've got a copy that was showed at least 2,700 parts per million.
And that's exposure to ammonia. What are some of the health effects of ammonia exposure?
Well, your lungs is your first deal. Inhalation. The second one is your eyes, and they have not talked about eye absorption of dust or chemical vapors at all until just recently out on site. And if that's the second easiest point of entry, they need to educate us to what's going on. For years, all that we heard was that we got a lot of people wearing glasses out at Hanford because of glare. It is not because of glare, I feel directly, it's because of chemical and radiation exposure to your eyes.
What will these gases, such as ammonia and mercury gas, volatilized, what will that do to your eyes?
It can cause you all the way to go blind.
Does it cause cataracts?
Cataracts mess up your cornea and iris. What it says in the descriptions that you can get on the medical internets, it says visual disturbances. Now, I need more of an explanation of that, because I know one guy that had 5 eye operations in a year, and he's still worried to this day that he's going to go blind. And I know that my eyesight is also failing, and I don't think it's because of age.
I was going to ask what eye problems you've had.
I've had eye problems since I was 50. It just happens to coincide with the same time that I lost half my hair, I lost all my teeth, I had unresolved pneumonia for almost 2 years, I had coughing that was just a deep, dry, hoarse cough, and all of my symptoms that I didn't know about at the time, but I found out in the last 3 years. My symptoms for mercury, lead, cadmium, nickel all line up 95-97%, depending on what document you're reading about. Some of the documents don't have all the symptoms listed, but then there's other documents that have other symptoms listed, but then they leave out some of the documents that you saw from the first one. And I've had testing, which is all the testing that I've had has been put down, that the doctor didn't know what he was doing, it was the wrong test, and the lab is not a recognized lab. And this gets into what I've gotten from AMH, as well as University of Washington Medical Monitoring Program for tank farm workers, which did nothing but waste our time and left no resolution for any worker that went to that program to try to find out what's wrong with them.
The University of Washington was not helpful?
No.
What did they, you know, what did they do or what did they not do? You know, what?
I'm going to have to get into my own version of what I think.
Okay.
Along with some documentation that I have. My own version is that the person that was paying the bill for that, aside from the taxpayer, was telling him to have tunnel vision instead of a panorama vision.
And who was paying?
DOE.
Okay. And
ORP, CHG, DOE, it all comes out of DOE eventually.
Yes.
Not right away.
Okay.
They had four different doctors in charge of that program in barely over a year. And the last one moved on to Portland. They were supposed to have a scheduled quarterly meeting in September. That did not happen. We were supposed to have communication back and forth in between those meetings every 3 months so that they could refine their research and find out better as to what's going on. There was no communication that I know of at all. And they issued a letter of findings to everybody that was on that program, and I know of nobody that agreed with the findings in that letter. In fact, they were all so turned off, saying that UW is so far off base, it's stupid, that it was a waste of time.
How many people got tested about?
I'm kind of thinking that I heard a number of 50 or better.
And when did the testing take place?
Over a period of several months, maybe around a year. But the funding has gone away for the program, so tank farm workers are right back to having nothing except AMH, which might have a degree of trust, but there's been a lot of mistrust as well. Politics,
so
again, over science.
What kinds of tests did they run? Do you think that the tests were adequate, but the results were minimized, or do you think the wrong tests were given?
I know the wrong tests were given because the doctors, to Carl and Lauren Lewis, said it themselves, that the tests are only good up to a maximum of 2 months.
After your exposure?
After the exposure. And beyond that, there is no viable test.
So there is no way they could test at this point for a lot of the people?
Well, whether there is a test and whether they're saying there's a test can be two different stories. Now, with my doctor, and I'm showing you the card right now, and he wrote a statement stating that he feels that my exposures are from out here. The biggest percentage has got to be, what, 51%? That he feels that my exposures, my symptoms of the exposures, are because of what I've gotten out here.
Is this based on a failure to identify any other cause? I mean, what leads him to that?
I've heard it blamed on personal lifestyle by the company. Okay? I don't swallow split shot from fishing weights. I don't repack my own ammunition. I don't do this or that. I don't eat 2 tons of tuna to get mercury. I have voluntarily and paid for it myself, gotten my house water tested. And I have since gotten other tests from the city because they knew what I was looking for in the way of toxic metals or chemicals. Their water complies well within the range to call it palatable drinking water. Okay. So I've got that covered. I've got everything covered. Now, as far as the doctor goes, this doctor that I am going to is a fellow in environmental medicine. Now, that's a long ways up the food chain, what I understand with the doctor. If they become a fellow, that means that they are extremely highly respected. FAAEM is his credentials there. It's right on his card. And so, I want to have, if they dare, let them put it in writing that the doctor doesn't know what he's doing, it's the wrong test, and that the lab is not a recognized lab. Because I can disprove it, which I did with the University of Washington, and they shut me out of it. They actually had overhead slides that I have copies of that they were trying to disparage me in a public meeting in front of everybody, because the doctor did know what he was doing. He gave a fully recognized OSHA test and diagnosis. By chelation is recognized. It's highly controversial with a lot of doctors that are protecting their pocketbook rather than going by the science. And that's the biggest stumbling block for everybody that's sick out at Hampton. But, okay, the test is OSHA law. The diagnosis and treatment is recognized as OSHA law. And CDC also recognizes it. The lab has got to be a CLIA lab, C-L-I-A. I believe that stands for Clinical Laboratory Independent Analysis. I've got exactly what it stands for in my paperwork that I have. But I might be a little off base, but that's the intent of what it actually means. And I tried showing this to the doctor in charge at University of Washington. A bar graph that I had showing the exposure levels. My lead is almost off the chart. It's that high. But this laboratory, Doctor's Data, only does testing for 34 different countries. And here, anybody that I run across on the company side tries to make it look like it's a fly-by-night outfit. It does have a CLIA certification and license. You don't get that unless you qualify to some very high standards by the Center of Disease Control. I've researched this stuff. I've gotten the information, and I can't get anybody within the company or doctors around beholding to the company. I can't get any of them to even recognize that I have complied. I've complied to the letter of the law. And if I haven't, spell it out to me in writing how I can do it, because I've offered many times. I says, if there's a better test, tell me. I'll do it. I'm more than happy to do it. And nobody says anything.
Now, you said you personally test very high for lead.
Yes.
Is there a way to test for these other elements such as nickel, cadmium, and mercury? Are there valid tests that exist, you know, and have you had those tests?
The same test that I had is a 24-hour urine collection by chelation.
Mm-hmm.
And I liken it to this. You see dust up in the rafters. You know it's up there, but as long as you don't mess with the dust in the rafters, it's going to stay there. You're okay. But if there's a disturbance of any kind, and the light is right, you can see this stuff kind of sift down, right? Okay, in this case, I'm saying that the chelation shakes the dust in the rafters. And although doctors are trying to say it's not a valid test, it gives a sampling. And if you have no lead up there, then there would be nothing to shake down. If you have no cadmium or nickel or mercury, and there have been people who have the same test as I did that showed up positive, elevated for mercury. How did that come about? Well, because they were more closer to salt well operation or stuff like this. They were more current than what I was. I showed nothing for mercury for the same test because my deposits are chronic, historic, old. They've done their damage, and they've locked themselves up either in my bone tissue or my brain, like for mercury, or they've expelled out of the body. Why? Well, because getting on the government websites, that's exactly what it says it does. And that's what my research is sticking close as possible to the government websites, because government agencies don't like to fight each other.
But
they
true.
Do like to do research. And the research they do, I think, can be very valuable.
So you don't show for mercury at this time.
I don't show for mercury, but if and it also says that too. It's a qualifier. that if they can't measure what you've actually been exposed to, that they look at the symptoms. And that is fully valid according to CDC and some of these other websites, that if you show the symptoms but they can't measure it because it's too old, that they go by the symptoms. And it's not, oh yeah, you read up on it and they say, oh yeah, I got that one, I got that one, I got that one. No, I don't need to say anything because it's documented in years past. And there's my proof.
What are the symptoms of mercury exposure?
Oh, God, there are so many of them, and it can be misinterpreted.
I'm sure.
As so many other types of diseases. There's a gal that I know that's had elevated mercury by that testing that I had done. She shows the mercury, but she's been diagnosed as having MS. And yet, since she's had that test, her symptoms haven't gotten any worse, but they haven't gotten any better. And with MS, it's a progressive degeneration.
So is it similar? Is it the muscle weakness, the kind of things you associate with MS?
Muscle weakness, insomnia, vision problems, along with my hair loss and all, and losing my teeth that I told you about. I also had 5 kidney stones during that short time frame. I have had none before and none since. I haven't had kidney stones, I think, for about 7 or 8 years now.
So this was an acute period where quite a bit.
I believe that both happened, both acute and chronic, because I worked out in tank farms every day, going out to these different pit jobs with good intentions of doing it right. And health and safety was protecting me. No.
What about nickel and cadmium? How do they manifest? What do they show in terms of symptoms?
I'd have to double check because you're talking just so many symptoms, but you're talking about rashes and terminology like nickel itch and, you know, just some terrible rashes and all these other symptoms. But I mean, I have all that paperwork for you to look at if you like. You're more than welcome to look it over. It seems to me like it's very thorough and probably in most cases quite honest. But the biggest problem they got is that a lot of this needs to be updated by exposures that people are getting. And we need to do it out there. Hanford needs to be the starting place.
I was going to ask, and this is jumping ahead, because, you know, but what have you thought about what you want? Is there a series of things you want? You want different programs instituted now. Is that one of the things you want?
Right. Honest programs.
And
honest programs that will get people some relief to the symptoms instead of just getting double talk.
So do you feel if a brand new tank farm worker starts work tomorrow, are there still hazards out there to which that person's going to be exposed?
Yes, because the company is making light of the hazards by not requiring SCBA. They do not have one tank farm that is being chemically scrubbed like they should. And if they had chemical scrubbers and monitoring on those scrubbers, then it would probably be a much better situation. But not any of those chemicals are being trapped by exhausters. They're just being dispersed.
Now, is this true only for the tanks that have liquids in them, or is it also true for the single shell?
It's got to be for sludge or any possibility of any vapors being given off, no matter where it is. If it's in the tank, under the leaker tanks, or on top of the tanks that have had leaks. It doesn't matter. It's still the same tank waste and still the same tank vapors, no matter where it's at.
This raises so many questions for me because, you know, at the present, they're trying to mobilize the salt crust inside some of the tanks, the single shell, and pump and slurry that and pump it into a double shell. And that is considered then the standard that the state demands for the tank to be, quote, clean. Is that very dangerous work then? To be going in there and with water mobilizing the crust?
You're mobilizing waste that is chemical and possibly putting it in a tank that has incompatible mixtures and different temperatures, although they try to watch for that, I believe, that they don't shock the tank with different temperatures. But it's the idea that I don't personally think that they allow the waste, once it's transferred, to settle in a little bit before they take the tank farm off mask. That they say, okay, transfer done, line drains complete, maybe we'll just go ahead and take it off mask after a few hours. You know, I don't know the driver behind that, but I feel that those chemicals are in the process of mixing and sifting on through the layers or whatever, that they're releasing those farms. I believe, off the top of my uneducated head, that they're probably releasing these farms far too soon.
Well, then I hear you then have to, then you have too much water in the double shell because you've volatilized the salt cake with water.
Right.
Then you've got to do another evaporation each time, is that right?
Well, I don't know about each time, but they're hurting for space. And AP Farm is the last resort, aside from maybe using one of the SY tanks, which is where 101 SY comes into play again. I think that's the only one. I don't know. I don't make the planning for what goes on in the future.
But are they then not handling tank waste three times? First, you pumped out the liquids from the single shell. Then you pump out the salt cake with water, put it in the double shell, and then handle it a third time by having to run it through the evaporator. So you're
right.
Handling it three times. Is there any alternative to that? I mean, that's a lot of handling.
Well, from what I've seen and heard, that in situ vitrification sounds so much better than transporting it over to a big vitrification plant, for which I went down to the one in Savannah River twice a few years ago, and I don't know how well that works or not, but they darn sure should have learned a lot from the waste and in a lot of cases poor design. There was a deal I brought up about manipulators there for their process cells. They had one manipulator per cell. And I says to the engineer that was giving the tour, I says, I'm curious, what do you do when the manipulator fails? And he says, well, we just open the door and strip the boot off and change it out. I says, well, yeah, you're talking about an absolutely clean environment. But I says, you know, with process, you're talking about lethal radiation. And if you only have one manipulator, you can't use another manipulator to undo the fingers and slip the boot down and being able to change it out the proper way. And I lit a light on this guy that, oh, that makes sense. And I says, you know, you can actually save yourself God knows how many hundreds of hours of research and design if you just get together with the people up at WESA that have done all this stuff and change manipulators out with another manipulator. And, you know, it just made nothing but sense to this guy. And, you know, I hope this kind of shows a little bit about the kind of attitude that I'd rather have for all this.
Sure. You want to contribute. You want to be positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yet, there's been times where I know that I have not been appreciated at all.
I was going to say, did you ever think, ever, when you went to work here, that you'd end up angry and,
no.
And you know?
No. And you want to talk about being ignored, this lead prayer that I was talking about, the whole lead program, I put that on as a PIE and CIM, I think it is, a cost savings deal. And I recommended some solutions to it as well. And, you know, I haven't heard a single word about it.
So you didn't just complain. You recommended solutions.
Right. And now out at work, I see that they got postings for recommending the Alara Person of the Year. And, gee, I guess I still don't qualify with all the stuff that I have saved them and could still save them if they'd listen to some horse sense.
I was going to say, what is the attitude today? Is it known by most of your supervisors or any of them that you have been to the Joint Council and that you have raised concerns?
The supervisors that need to know.
And do they?
And I have had no hassle at all from any of them. In fact, one supervisor that I had previously mentioned that has diabetes. There's a lot of supervisors that are saying nothing. But that doesn't mean they don't talk among themselves.
And so you get an innuendo. You get a sense of what they're...
I know that they're concerned about their own health. Yeah.
And so you feel that they're essentially glad that someone's speaking up? Or
I know they are.
And they're a little bit afraid to do it themselves, do you feel?
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that because they have longer to work and they need the jobs?
You know, you got to factor that in because you've seen how some of the past layoffs have been by some of the good managers that, you know, they are not exempt from getting on the chopping block if they bring up concerns.
Right.
And there are several different levels of safety out at Hanford. There's the one that you're trained to, and then there's the one that you operate to, and there are others as well. The company says, oh, no, we want to be up here. But if you start with the level that you're trained to, they yell and scream at you.
They don't want you performing at that level?
Well, I mean, if you try performing at that level, I give you a classic example of the duct work that separated in S form with that fiberglass ducting. Okay, I was trained to that level, but I operated to that level. And we've already gone over what on earth happened there.
So, do you believe that if you operate to that level, it slows down the work to the point that they're not happy?
Absolutely, yeah. And the only way that the situation is going to change is when you start bringing the truth out, which is as much trouble as it's getting me into, and I'd rather not be in, I am going to follow through.
Have you thought of or approached any of the legislators? Have you talked to, say, your state rep or your...
Well, I'll make an exception on that. Larry Haler and I go back several years with the Hanford family when we were defending what was going on out here at the Hanford site.
I remember.
With Booth Gardner and Brock Adams and all the wonderful ones that rather shut the place down than to try to get it fixed right.
1987, I remember.
And there was five busloads of us that went over to Booth Gardner at Olympia. Well, I did that too. I did a lot of work with the Hanford family to try to help things get better, make it right. And Larry Haler was right in the middle of all that. Cliff Groff, Mike Fox, I'm friends with all of them. And unfortunately, it looks like Larry Haler, according to what Cliff Groff told me recently, is that Larry chooses not to look at what's going on out there for tank farms, especially the tank farms. I've talked to Larry myself about 4 months ago, maybe not that long. And although he says, yeah, I'm going to have to take a look, he's never once got back to me. And he hasn't got back to Cliff either. And they were all really good friends and really getting something positive done.
I wanted to go back to some, we had talked before a little bit about what you want as the outcome to these concerns. You wanted some chemical scrubbers on the tank farms.
The best technology. I don't know if it's chemical scrubbers.
Okay.
I'm not the smart guy in town. That's why I'm not in charge. State-of-the-art stuff. If we got state-of-the-art problems out there, identified by Mike Lawrence and Tom Grumbly, among others, then maybe we ought to have state-of-the-art solutions that can be applied to the industry in a lot of other ways, and thereby share the technology and save that many more people from being hurt.
What else? What about, I don't know the right word. I don't mean retribution, but what about going back and addressing the harms of the past? How does that happen?
Even yesterday, they're doing VPP interviews out at work now, okay? Tank Farms wants VPP star status so bad they can taste it. And I hope to God they never get it until they fix it. Because they don't deserve it now. They're still trying to muddy the water. We have no training going on for any of our operators now. None.
In what?
They suspended training. Any kind of health and safety or...
What?
Yeah.
Why? When?
Oh, we're understaffed and they got jobs to do. And
there's no training?
No training.
And this is known to DOE?
Oh, I don't know. I don't talk to DOE.
Yeah. Is it known to the council? You've brought that up?
Oh, I brought it up, yeah. Probably not as much as I need to update them, but I mean... That's been an ongoing thing.
You'd think that would be almost a requirement of the contract.
Yeah, and I'm sure it is.
It's
just like we had certifications that expired under Westinghouse there for a long time. And they saw to it that, we just don't have time. So we're going to suspend training and extend certifications. Why? Because we can do that. That's the Westinghouse mentality, was that we can do it, so we're gonna. We'll extend the certifications, even though they've expired, and you should have a refresher course on the training, that we'll just extend it. And they did that. That's the kind of mentality that we've got to put up with. And I see it getting better in some ways. And in other ways, they're still in a major state of denial for the hurt people out there, that they're not helping them right. They're just making a smoke screen and buying time.
What about the people who are sick or potentially sick or haven't been tested and may be sick? What should happen with them?
It's really pathetic that across the board there are so many people that can be messed up. And yet, I know the DOE is studying them, but very quietly, because they're protecting their wallet.
Are there any, has the Centers for Disease Control or the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH?
NIOSH has been out here, gave DOE glowing results, if I recall.
How recently?
Oh, 3 years, two and a half.
Four tank farm?
Yeah, I've got the document. It did list several areas of improvement. And I think the council already has that. But I have a copy of that.
Was this before the big tank farm vapor issue came up in 04? That NIOSH thing?
During the same time. Hmm. Because that triggered him to come out.
I see.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the 2004 vapors issue? How it rose up to the surface and how it got so...
If I can remember, it's been other people that brought it up, and some of the other people have already been settled with.
So, tell me how that all came about. It started in Sea Farm, did it not? Or
yeah, okay. Yeah.
And
with Sea Farm, it's kind of interesting because there was one boss and some other operators that also took a hit from vapors. Off the identified tank. The one boss has lost half of his breathing capacity.
You mean when you say take a hit, you mean that he was exposed?
Right.
Okay. Continue. I'm sorry to interrupt.
A vapor hit. And the one gal that took a vapor exposure was one of the ones, there's only four. But she was that one that I said had elevated mercury on her 24-hour chelation test that she had. It showed elevated mercury, among other things. She also had lead. All the people had elevated lead of the four besides me. Mine was the highest. But there was, I think, three of the four that had elevated mercury with no rhyme or reason why it should be elevated, other than all of them worked on salt wells. There's your common denominator. The most recent, all of those people worked on salt wells.
Now, when you say a couple of supervisors, what? Tell me about that. What happened? They happened to be in the farm and... What happens? Is it a constant exposure or is there a puff?
No. If you liken 101SY to a burp,
yeah.
Okay, everybody knows what a burp is one way or the other. But all these other tanks, from what I've heard from old timers when I first came to tank farms,
yeah.
They said that there was more self-boiling tanks then. And these tanks... You'd be out getting your readings like in a complex or something.
Yeah.
And that all of a sudden you'd feel the ground shake.
Ooh.
And you could hear the rumble. And then all of a sudden there would be steam venting out the inlet breathers to these tanks. The inlet breather fillers would be belching out steam. And... They knew that the tank, the self-boiling tank, was turning over. How would it turn over? By gas buildup. Just a burp. And so these were self-boiling tanks. They turned over just like 101SY, except even more violently, because they had the steam coming out. Okay, HPTs would check for radiation contamination at the breather filters. Everything's okay. Get back to work.
But you're saying that probably chemicals came out at the same time.
It had to. Chemicals in the tanks, self-boiling tanks, what's above 77 degrees besides mercury, a whole long list of the 1,800 chemicals identified, I'm sure. And yet, we don't know what they are. But if it was in the tank, we could find that out. By just checking the chemical properties of it. And that would leave you out not knowing about the synergistic effects with that kind of heat, though. Because no one's ever bothered to check and find out.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, the synergistic effect. That term intrigued me when you mentioned it before. And what, you know, we've ID'd the chemicals, or many of them now.
Right.
After quite a bit of time. Has anyone done a study on the synergistic effects, or do you simply go to the internet and read about them in some other setting, but not the Hanford setting?
I think there's been some testing at various times and various circumstances, but to say that there's been anything that would help the nuclear industry, they haven't released it to the workers or the public. Now, I could give you an example. You get a gallon of swimming pool chlorine,
mm-hmm,
and a gallon of muriatic acid, and if you have separate, you can probably smell that, and it's not going to really do you a number if you do it once. But if you put both of them together, it'll flat kill you.
Hmm.